You know, every time I speak, I want the truth to come out. You know what I'm saying? Every time I speak, I want to shiver. You know, I don't want them to be like, they know what I'm going to say because it's polite. They know what I'm going to say. And even if I get in trouble, you know what I'm saying? That ain't that what we're supposed to do? I'm not saying I'm going to rule the world or I'm going to change the world, but I guarantee that I will spark the brain that will change the world.
I think what you're trying to ask is why am I so insistent upon giving out to them that blackness, that black power, that black pushing them to identify with black culture. I think that's what you're asking. I have no choice over it. In the first place, to me, we are the most beautiful creatures in the whole world, black people. I mean, and I mean that in every sense, outside and inside. And to me, we have a culture that is surpassed by no other civilization, but we don't know anything about it. So again, I think I've said this before in this same interview, I think at some time before, my job is to somehow make them curious enough or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them, and I will do it by whatever means necessary.
I am your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Hillary Roberts, and welcome to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. We are the return of intelligent radio as we ensure the free flow of opinions and push the envelope on the questions America's afraid to ask in the mainstream media. Good morning, Hillary. Glad to have you back with me as one of our Queens of Intellect members who holds me down on the show every Saturday. I love what y'all do, love y'all perspectives. So if you will, say hello to the intellectual outcasts, as I now call the listeners, if you will, and, you know, give any background that you would like to give or share, and then we'll get right into this morning's discussion, which I think we're going to go pretty deep on this one. But again, thank you for being with us, Queen.
Good morning, Montoya. Good morning, listeners. Thank you for having me back. It's always a pleasure to be dialoguing with you.
No, absolutely. I just noticed I found you on Instagram, IG, and I like the philosophy. I like that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yep, I have my own way of thinking, as you know.
Of course. That's exactly why I bring you. You know what I'm saying? This is, again, intellectual outcasts, those who don't think the same as everyone else, and we try to be a place of solace. Get everyone out of the fray of what's going on in the media. So, you know, we won't spend any time on the unfortunate demise of that submarine, that, you know, crazy situation or whatever. We won't spend any time on that. You know, we stay away from the hot button items and try to be a place where, you know, for those who like to think, who don't like to spend too much time on social media, or, you know, I think we've all, to a degree, can be slaves to our devices, if you will. But again, I think the intellectual outcast, you know, most of y'all use it at a minimum. So that's how I see you use it. So I'm glad to have you. But if we will, let's go ahead and get started with this morning's discussion question. And the way I love to start, which you've done this before, so hopefully you're ready to get put on the spot. But it's basically, when you first heard the discussion question worded this particular way, which is perpetual struggle a hustle? When you first heard that question, I said, hey, Queen, can you hold me down? What popped into your head when you heard that question? Is perpetual struggle a hustle?
Well, as I told you, it was interesting that you called me on that day, because all that morning I had been listening to old clips or shows from Donahue in the 90s when Khalil Muhammad and Farrakhan were on there. And I was telling you, I was thinking, like, this is the same conversation that's still going on. And not that that conversation doesn't have value. And I asked you, like, are we talking about specific people or groups or what have you? And, you know, you gave your answer. But I think at some point, like, we have to not want to struggle. And the conversation has to move to not doing that anymore. It is, I think. I don't know if hustle is the right word or the word that I want to use, but people can drift off of that. I don't think that's something like I want to focus on per se, like to get out of this perpetual problem that we're finding ourselves in. And I would like the discussion nowadays to move more towards action items that need to be done, not, you know, keep hope alive and those kinds of things.
No, I love it. And that's exactly the dialogue. The dialogue is always, I feel like we're, I always say we're the best in the world at hard conversations on race, sex, and culture. But the reason I even suggest that is I think partly we get into nuance. I think we do nuance and detail very well. But the other part of that is the aspect of challenging even current status quo thinking, if you will. And often that's how you make the change that you need to make. You know what I mean? Like, oh, why have we always done it this way? Sometimes people don't ask that question. And so there's a lot of aspects. The actual title, just to be clear with you and share this with you, I didn't say this to you the other day, but it literally just comes from a personal quote of mine where I say perpetual struggle is a hustle. You know, that's just something that I say. And so I just flipped that quote into this morning's discussion question. If you are a first-time listener, we always do our show in the form of a question. Because part of the idea, again, I go by Black Socrates, is to take the Socratic method, ask a bunch of questions, and see if we can, you know, in a sense, get to some better solutions or some better thoughts. And as we always say on this show, if you think better, you'll do better. You know what I mean? And so with that said, it's not about it necessarily who's right or wrong. And, yeah, I'm playing around with the word hustle because, again, there are, as you said, Hillary, there are grifters in the community. And I would even go as far as to say this, that even people with the best of intentions can actually, can hustle this concept of always being in a struggle because of clearly understanding what resonates within our community. And I would even go one step further and say that sometimes even those who we think with the best intentions are very aware of what they're doing, even though it's not obvious. And for me, it's never about the individuals or the people. It's about the concept in general. Like you said, can we advance that conversation? I think it's clear at this point, to your point, watching clips from 20 years ago and the narrative still being the same, it is absolutely time to advance that conversation. And plenty of people have wanted to do that and have tried to do that. And I will even say, based on what you said, Hillary, here's the balancing act, or what I would say the bridge to the action that you're talking about. I've personally felt like that conversation, I've heard it most of my life, like you said, from those shows, I've heard it most of my life. I've always said the missing piece has been the bridge from what was valuable out of those conversations in reference to what our community needs to be doing, the bridge between those conversations, if you will, to the action items was the thinking. I don't think we've ever stepped back and figured out how do we need to think to get to the actions that you're talking about? So I've personally, tell me what you think about this, and we'll go to a short break. Give me a thought on this. But I've always personally thought that a lot of the times that we've come together or groups come together to try to, in a sense, move the community forward, I felt like they've gotten bogged down or we're talking too much and action, and the groups could never come together because the missing piece is the bridge. Like, to get the actions that you, in a sense, will require or that you personally do quite often, you might need to change the thinking of those to get the actions that you're talking about. And I've always felt like that was what was missing. And so in my opinion, or that's pretty much why I started Mental Dialogue, to be that conduit between the action item, I mean, the things that we talk about, to the action that we need. Let's think about it better and we'll get to those actions. Give me a quick thought on that and then we'll go to the break and get started on this morning's discussion question.
Yeah, I think part of it, I mean, I think that most people in the space don't have nefarious purposes. Like, they have good intentions and they, you know, want us to, you know, progress and be successful. Like, that's just my feeling on it. I think maybe a lot of people, they don't know what to do, like, but they have the gift of gab, but they don't really
What I'm asking specifically, if you don't mind, what I'm asking specifically is my thought about that bridge, the gap, the thinking. Now, I just want to ask, I just want to see what you thought about that part, and then we'll get directly into this morning's discussion. So I just wanted to get a
quick talking to action.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like I said, what I was asking was, I said, hey, mental dialogue, I pretty much started because I feel like the myth has always been in our community has been, in a sense, people say, oh, we're just talking, and then the people that want to create, push for the action, I think the missing bridge has been the way that we think. I think that's what's important to explore to kind of bridge the gap between those with the ideas and those with the action. So I just wanted to hear your thoughts about that, if that makes sense.
I don't really understand, like, what, maybe I'm not understanding the question, like, is how to get to, from talking to action?
I was just saying that I've always thought that the solution between those two things was how we think about it. So there are people with ideas, and there are people saying, we need to push for actions, we don't act enough. And I've always said, well, if you act without thinking correctly, you're not going to get the right action. So I was just having, I don't know if I'm not being clear. I'm just saying the thought of having to think right is the issue, in my opinion, for why we haven't gotten the actions that we wanted. I don't know if I'm, maybe I'm not being clear. I don't, if you're not. Because again, okay, we're going to get directly into the question. I was going to, I'm kind of extending the break just to try to be clearer here. Maybe I'm not being, I guess I'm not being clear.
Okay, I'm sorry. You know, it might be me. I mean, I don't know. I think we think too much, to be honest. Like, it's too much thinking, too much talking, not enough doing. I feel like the solutions can be very simple, or should be simple. Like, they don't have to be overly complicated. A lot of the verbiage, they're nebulous, like, concepts. They don't actually accomplish anything. We don't have to all get together. We don't have to have all this unity. You just have to know where you want to get. Like, there's not enough goal setting.
Gotcha. I respect that. Let me go to this break and we'll get this thing started. Sorry about the confusion. All right, we'll be right back. All I ask is that you think.
What happens when your customers call your business and you're too busy to answer or call them back in a timely manner? You lose that business. Shockingly, 61% of inbound calls go unanswered. But fear not, tchmedia.ai is here to change the game. We specialize in capturing, nurturing, and converting your prospects into loyal customers. With our state-of-the-art communication solutions, no interaction will be left behind. When you miss a call, we've got you covered with automatic, engaging texts that keep your prospects connected and eager to choose you over your competitors. Don't let potential customers slip away. Make the smart choice with tchmedia.ai and skyrocket your conversions today.
AI is here to change the game. Protests like this one over the Confederate flag erupted across the country in the wake of the shootings at a South Carolina church. It is just the latest in what feels like a series of protests and demonstrations over the last year focused on race relations that started with the death of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. Today, a group of religious leaders came together to call for justice for all. D.C. Bureau Chief Sam Ford reports from Northwest with a look at plans to mark the anniversary of the Million Man March.
Though it was billed as a press conference, it was anything but. It was a rally for Nation of Islam Minister Louis Farrakhan and against many of the recent events from Ferguson to Charleston that have angered African Americans.
We came to tell every racist, white supremacist, we don't die, we multiply. We gotta get justice or else.
That was the repeated theme, justice or else.
Because it's black lives that are being slaughtered.
We know what justice is. It's fair dealing. It's the law that distinguishes between right and wrong.
Farrakhan and others who organized the Million Man March in October 1995 will hold a 20th anniversary march in October to include people of all races, genders, and orientations.
They see the lack of fairness in this nation, and they are determined to make a change, and the way that we do that is with unity.
Farrakhan belittled efforts after Charleston, like calling for the removal of the Confederate flag.
Pull a flag down and you supposed to go away satisfied? See, you don't know what justice looks like.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Hillary Roberts. I'm sorry. This morning's discussion question is perpetual struggle a hustle? As we hear Louis Farrakhan, as well as another leader in that cut, kind of rousing up the community, clearly with situations that we've unfortunately experienced in this country over and again, whether it be a police shooting or you hear reference to the Confederate flag being pulled down. And so ultimately, it's usually just a matter of time, unfortunately, until, you know, some situation rears its head where all, even the rhetoric, in a sense, heard on that clip is all repeated once again. And again, for me particularly, this is not about the individual or the name that's used. However, the conversation is the exact same. And I would say this to you, Hillary, and hear your thoughts on this. I would say that to a degree, if someone is using that rhetoric to, in a sense, resonate with the community or rouse up the Black community, in particular when an incident like that happens, if you will, a lot of the coming together doesn't, in my opinion, or often in my opinion, doesn't lead to maybe some of the actions that you speak of, if you will. And so that's where I will challenge, even in a sense, people with good intention, if there isn't follow-up actions that make sense, that in a sense move the needle on these circumstances happening, then that's where I start saying, is it a hustle, even if it's subconscious, if that makes sense? Your thoughts on that, Queen?
Well, I think you might be onto something there. And I really don't like to even think or say that, but you might be onto something, because you can't keep saying the same thing over and over for decades, you know, on end, and we're still in the same position. Like, you have progress somewhere. Like, we wanted this, we got this. You know, we set this goal, we achieved it. Like, there has to be something tangible. And I think, over the course of, like, the Civil Rights Movement and the years since then, there's not enough tangible things that have been achieved or accomplished in that time. So, I mean, you might be onto something. It could be a hustle.
And again, that's where I want to go deep. I want to go deep to the point where, in a sense, again, I don't have a particular person in mind. I don't mind saying names. We're not politically correct. But again, the goal is not about the individual. It's conceptually that we see this throughout the community. Obviously, it's easily to point out these certain clips because they're big names and they're all over the internet. But, you know, this same thing happens locally, and to a degree, when you say I'm onto something that, in a sense, some in particular people are not only always out front, but also there will be, quote unquote, money raised, right? Money raised to do what? Or even if sometimes even some of them can explain what happened, quote unquote, with the money or what was done with the money, if you will. But even in that explanation, rarely, in my opinion, is it tangible enough for those who got together and said, hey, we want to do something. Rarely, in my opinion, is that something tangible enough for anybody to feel like there was a significant difference. Sometimes you just don't know the information, but more times than not, I feel like it's rinse and repeat. And the hustle becomes is, let me go say these things and I'll be the mouthpiece. And so that's what I mean by on to something. You know, when you say, well, I should say, when you say on to something, that's what I'm meaning. Like, even the people we trust, can the message, doesn't the message eventually have to change?
Yes, it does have to change into something that's like, I mean, there's a time and place to galvanize people, and you do need that, you know, even, you know, throughout. People get tired or, you know, they lose hope. Okay, you got to galvanize them. That's fine. But in between all that, like, there isn't or hasn't been any kind of, like, anything you can, like, feel in your own life. Maybe they pass these, or they're going to have commissions. They're going to talk about this and that. But, like, in your actual life, you don't see it. You don't feel it. You can't touch it. It's nothing you actually experience or benefits you. And we don't have enough of how do we get to this. You raise money, but how did that impact people's lives or a lot of people's lives, not just your own pocket? Because there are some people, like, I just straight up won't even listen to. Like, they come on TV or something, like, I just turn. I'm not interested at all. Like Al Sharpton, like I'll never listen to anything he has to say. And they themselves, like they might start off good, like they, you know, raring to go and they're down for the cause, you know, and then over time, like I don't know if they become corrupted or, you know, things happen. But at the end of the day, we, in my opinion, have not seen enough progress to us being anywhere near the top. We are still second-class citizens on the bottom. I don't want us to be second-class citizens on the bottom. We're not supposed to be playing second fiddle to anybody. But no one is really talking about the goal isn't for us to build coalitions. The goal isn't for us to get people to like. And the goal is we need to be on top. We need to win. We don't want to win, and that's why we keep losing. And you keep having people out here just, you know, saying words to galvanize people, and that's just our lot in life, it seems like.
And so I think you were really onto something prior to the break when you started talking about the solutions, if you will, are simple. They don't have to be these drawn out things, right? And so to your point with the simple solutions that are, in my opinion, never part of a rally, if you will, and I don't want to just focus on when we're having issues, if you will, but just in general, the solutions that are simple, in my opinion, part of why I think they're not offered is because it will require sometimes personal responsibility that while you're galvanizing people about what's happening or what's wrong in this moment, people want or not tuned to listen to. And if somebody is hustling, why would you actually offer solution, if that makes sense? Because, and the other part is, in the event that this person also is getting money from the community, then it does become a little bit of what Malcolm used to talk about, those who become race hustlers, if that makes sense. So so you could be the race hustler or not, but either way, you lose your positioning in the community, even if your goal is not to hustle the community per se. Your ego alone might be part of the reason why you're not offering something that's more tangible. And again, to your point, more tangible may not mean all of us coming together, because I think even that concept is always been a mistake, because we misunderstand the racial construct, if you will. Your thoughts, Queen?
Oh, I would agree with that. I just feel when people, it is a hustle, I'll just say that. A lot of it can be hustling, because no one has, or very few people have, like, actually tried to affect real solutions or offered real solutions. It's just to keep restating what the problem is. And we understand the problem. And then they'll come at us like, you know, have you noticed, like, when black people want something, like, it's always all these hoops you have to jump through or some paperwork that you missed. Like, it's always something why we can't get anything. But other people don't really have to go through all that. It's just they show up. And a part of our problem is we don't make demands either. Demands that something that can actually be delivered. You know, it's not unity, like you said, but that's just a concept. It doesn't accomplish anything. Especially when you're not united in the activity. It's just we're just sitting around talking about the problem all the time and trying to get sympathy. Those don't accomplish anything. And I do wish people would move more towards solutions. Keep it, like, short and simple. I don't want to have keep having these conversations, like, 30 years from now. Because I remember, like, growing up in the 90s, you know, it's like, yeah, you, like, you know, get down for the cause and you listen to all these people, but they're still saying the same thing, and it's 2023. And it could be for attention, clout, money, like a combination of things. But sometimes it's like, okay, I don't want to listen anymore.
Nah, fair enough. The number to get in is 646-787-1691. Again, that's 646-787-1691. Press 1 to give us your 3 cents on this morning's discussion. And so, yeah, I'm with you 100% on that. And let me talk about this. Here's the thing that I think part of our misunderstanding as a culture or as a race, if you will, is due to the struggle that, in a sense, African-Americans with this unique history in this country has went through. I've always offered that to a degree we've developed culture under the concept of struggle. And when you understand how culture is really built, groups do that by choice, by their own doing, by what they will. Like, that's how culture is really built. But unfortunately, due to our history, part of our culture has been based around this thing of struggle and the construct of race. So due to that, we even look at, when you said other people don't have to do, you know, certain things or whatever, they just kind of do it, if you will. I think we also make the mistake of looking at other groups in a monolithic way in how they move. Like, for example, you know, me loving history, if you will, like the construct of white and black, which was in a sense given to the way that we see it today, if you will, was given to us, if you will, by the elite historically in this country, because this country obviously was built on the backs, you know, of others, if you will, to include our ancestors. And so we've kind of bought the construct hook, line, and sinker to the extent that will just generalize in a way that I think is unhealthy and keeps us from seeing better solutions. So, for example, historically saying, hey, this is what we'll say, this is, you know, in a sense, this is what white people did to, in a sense, create the United States the way that we know it today. We'll say that, and I'll highlight, like, for example, within this own country, the makings of it, the beginnings of it is, if you will, the French and the English, mostly Spanish to be included, but the biggest wars, if you will, in trying to take over this land was between almost sworn enemies historically at one point, the French and the English, if you will, trying to figure out who would, in a sense, control the new land. And so while obviously they were both, if you will, involved in the, in, you know, the transatlantic enslavement trade as far as labor and trying to get people here, if you will, they took very different paths. This is, in a sense, you know, white people, but when you generalize the construct, you don't, in a sense, pay attention to, it's not quote unquote white people coming together, if you will. The construct was handed to us because those very same white people, not only with the English and French fighting for who would control the land, then the quote unquote English that in a sense got control of the first 13 colonies in around, turned around on the very people that sent them here, if you will, to colonize the land and said, we don't want to be with you no more. And the reason I'm pointing out those details is because the dynamic of how groups actually pull something off or how people create culture is done in such a, it happens in such a dynamic way that reducing it to we should all come together actually too simplified, because it wasn't a whole nother group or a whole race, if you will, that came together to gain together to pull off anything that we see. It's like once you understand how something actually happens, then that's where you can, in my opinion, Hillary, start simplifying. Okay, you think like I do, what action are you going to take? And you're going to see way more movement. because we actually get bogged down, and you already said this, strictly from we can't do nothing until we come together. Like, we'll say things like that, not realizing that's not how action actually happens. Your thoughts on that, then we're going to go to another break.
Well, I think I agree with the part that you were talking about where we're supposed to struggle, or that's, you know, kind of the thing that is a major force, like, in our culture for Black people, is we're supposed to struggle. We're not supposed, you know, like, we just, it's a progress, takes a long time. You know, oh, we're, you know, we struggle and we still survive, like, that sort of thing. So that idea is very entrenched, and it's almost like a point of pride. And if you're not struggling, you know, you must be doing something bad or you're a bad person. And also this part about unity where other groups they're not all unified coming together and what have you. I mean, a third of the Hispanics voted for somebody that wanted to put a wall up on the border. So, and they still, you know, managed to get, you know, goodies and giveaways and benefits, you know, that benefit, you know, the majority of their community. So I think I agree that part of our problem is we are accepting constructs that were created for us instead of determining what exactly those should be, what the value should be, and how we should do things. And maybe part of that is because we are, you know, in a system that we didn't necessarily create. So we're trying to navigate that. There's really no getting around that, but we should be trying to devise strategies of we're playing a certain game.
No, absolutely.
But we can make our own rules too.
Yeah, I think you hit the head on the nail when you said, hey, that's why we're doing it. I think the dialogue you and I are having is it's time to navigate that construct in a more realistic way instead of assuming and taking it on, like you said, like it was given to us in a way that no longer serves us. I don't know that we're always aware of how we're taking the construct on and how it doesn't serve us, because I've definitely watched people complain about we need to come together first, and that in itself is so unrealistic. I'm going to play this cut from Yvette Cadell again, just kind of going back to a little time in history, which, of course, like you said, Hillary, reminds of how we're still having these same conversations. But again, I just want to dissect this conversation that Yvette Cadell, this is something that she had said about Farrakhan some years ago that created a bunch of controversy, and I thought it was appropriate to dig deeper, not in necessarily what they talked about then, but just a deeper way to dig into this conversation this morning. Is perpetual struggle a hustle? So if you will, sit back, listen to this cut, and we'll dialogue about it. Again, for anybody out there that wants to get in, 646-787-1691. You do have to press 1 to let us know you want to speak. We'll be right back.
Black World Family, Breaking Brown Family, and I just want to say that one of the people that I rarely, if ever, criticize is Minister Louis Farrakhan. And there is a reason for that. I rarely criticize Farrakhan because he has so many adherents who are so, you know, sort of so militantly in his corner that it's really, as far as I'm concerned, mostly a losing battle, because of no matter what you say, you know, a Nation of Islam, you know, loving person who loves Farrakhan isn't really going to change their minds. But I saw something that came across my Facebook feed last night, as a matter of fact, and I had to say something. I mean, I hear Farrakhan has this justice or else thing going on. I guess it is a marketing ploy to sort of sell, you know, Million Man March Part 2. And let me just say something, Black people. You know, I understand that one of the only things that this country, that the Western dominating forces respect is wealth and violence. That's where we are. Those are the two valuable products, wealth and violence. I get that. But let me just say, when you start telling Black people justice or else, you're really putting Black people in a lot of danger. When you think about the National Guard, the military, the militia, these oath keepers, everyone else, you think about, what are we, 13, 14% of the population? What I am saying is that this thing Farrakhan is doing, in the sense of we need 10,000 men who would rather be dead than to continue to see their babies in the streets or whatever, whatever. I'm telling you, this is some of the most potentially damaging race war encouraging stuff I've seen in a while. And what I'm saying is that, you know, if you start a race war, first of all, black people, we're gonna lose. You know, there is no way around that. This is, and let's be honest, even with what's happening, black people in America are probably better off than black people in a lot of other countries. So what I'm saying is, I'm not saying don't find a way to fight back. I'm saying, if Farrakhan wants to do this stuff, if Farrakhan wants to start this race war and talk about how death is, you know, preferable, you know, to living the way we're living and all that stuff, well, he should be the first one to bust a grape in the food fight. I mean, you have the Nation of Islam behind you, which is thousands of black people, thousands of black men, and you're talking about what we should be doing? You're living out in Hyde Park. Didn't he live like around the corner from Barack Obama? And you're talking about what black people should be doing and what you expect and 10,000 soldiers? Farrakhan, you've been around how long? You haven't done anything. You haven't done anything to kind of challenge white supremacy, and that's why you're allowed to breathe in this country. If you listen, there's a reason why every black radical who has authentically fought for black freedom in this country has been ousted. He is gone. He is no more. We have where's Rashida Shakur right now? She's in Cuba in hiding. Where is Fred Hampton? Where are all the Black Panthers? If you are a serious threat to white supremacy in this country, you are not allowed to breathe freely. You are not allowed to live lavishly in Chicago, you know, on the dollars of your Nation of Islam members. That's not allowed to happen. So,
welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Hillary Roberts. This morning's discussion question is perpetual struggle, a hustle. I don't know if you remember when Yvette started that controversy back, I forgot exactly when it was, but I do remember personally. I'm going to tell a little personal story and then get your thoughts, if you will, Hillary. But when the first Million Man March, I was going to the Air Force Academy, in a sense, stuck in school, really wanting to be a part of the first Million Man March back in 95. And, you know, decided based on, you know, going to that military college that, you know, I was gonna, it wasn't simple for us to leave school like most kids could, you know what I mean? We basically still had to take leave if we left and things of that nature. And it was very limited under the structure of the school. So, that was my excuse, if you will. If I remember correctly, a couple of our brothers figured out a way to go anyway. And, you know, much respect to them. I'm just thinking about, again, just giving some personal story to it. And so I remember at the time, my little rebellion of the moment was when it was playing on TV. Like, I went to a military school, so we didn't necessarily have, if you were a sophomore or you couldn't have a TV in your room if you were a sophomore or a freshman, which at the time I was. I think sophomore, maybe freshman, I can't remember. But either way, I might have been a junior. But either way, my little rebellion at the time was I'm going to cut class and watch a lot of the march or whatever. So that's what I did since I, you know, didn't figure out or bold enough to go as much as I quote wanted to be there. Anyway, I tell that part of the story is because when the 20-year anniversary happened, I was here in Atlanta. And because I had missed the first, I actually started going to some of the organizational meetings within the city, because each city had those, you know, committees to try to get people there for the 20-year anniversary. And I was very much wanting to be a part of this one because of, you know, my recall and my regret of not making the first one. And so I was going to the meetings, basically trying to even get a position to get others to come or whatever. And as I heard the message that Yvette talked about, as I kept hearing that message, justice or else, the reality for me, Hillary, was it wasn't resonating for a lot of the things that Yvette said. And then it wasn't resonating for me personally. And then Yvette comes out at that time. So what, 20 years later would have been what? 2015, am I doing the math right? 2015 is what it would have been. Uh-huh. And so she comes out with this. What she said resonated with me more. But I remember thinking about it prior to her coming out. I was starting to be at the meetings listening to what the focus was, which, again, I get getting there and getting people there was the focus. This is a 20-year anniversary, if you will. But they were also talking about, you know, what the plans would be outside of getting to D.C. because, you know, the long-held thought, we did a show on this years ago, you know, what actually came out of the Million Man March. And there's more that came out of it than most people are, you know, I would say most people are aware of, if you will. So I think there are some tangible things, and you'll hear another, I think I'm playing another cut that talks about some of the tangible things here later in the show or whatever. But I remember doing that show. But I just remember thinking, if we're going back 20 years later, I hope we're going to have discussions about more tangible things. And to their credit, the organizers were talking about things that will continue past the march itself, because that's what mattered the most to me. So initially, I'm joining, wanting to be a part of it because of my regret from 20 years prior. But at the time, I thought I was hearing, okay, all right, this is what we're going to do past it. But the justice of else didn't resonate with me because I'm like, okay, if that's going to be the focus of the dialogue, I'm not understanding how this is viable and a reasonable solution. And I had to be honest with myself and step away, and I did not go. Again, I don't necessarily, I'm not asking you a question, but just kind of your thoughts on the cut and hearing my personal thoughts. Because again, like yourself, I want to see small, tangible solutions that make sense. And I started feeling like we're just getting a broad message that resonates for most people. But this is not resonating for me, not because I was afraid of what he was saying. I just didn't see it as smart.
Well, my thoughts on the cut, I mean, some of the things that she was saying, you know, is will lend itself to, you know, this is kind of, you know, a hustle, or just what you do. You keep talking about, you know, these problems. Where I probably like have an issue with what she said is she took issue with the boldness of the statement, or, you know, the idea of what was, you know, justice or else. It's confrontational. And the fact is, you're going to have to be bold. We have, you know, we've tried to appease, we tried appeasement, that doesn't work. You know, like she pointed out, people have been very bold and they've been dealt with in one way or another. But it's going to require a level of boldness. There'll be consequences, you know, but if we're not willing to exist and hardships are going to be, then we should just resign ourselves to being where we are. And if that's what we want to do, then just say that and get it over with. You know, either way, that's what I'm saying. Like, make a decision and let's go forward. We're either going to be bold and, like, take some actions. I'm not saying, like, violent actions, but just, like, as far as actually making progress towards goals and being bold about it and not giving an inch about it, standing on your square kind of thing. Like, we want this, and until we get this, you know, this is what our response is going to be. It has to be that. Or we don't want to have to face any consequences. We're living pretty good. We're living okay. Yeah, the police can kill us at any time, but we live better than, you know, most other people on the planet, so we'll accept this. If that's what it is, just say that then. And just move forward.
So let me ask you about that. So when you say, well, this is what the response is going to be, what does that look like to you? And I challenged that. I challenged that from the standpoint of what are you saying that makes sense?
Okay,
here's
one example. All right. During election seasons, you know, they're like, oh, well, you know, vote this way. You know, well, you hold them accountable is the popular term. Mm-hmm. Hold them accountable.
Right.
But if you suggest that not voting, I'm not voting for any Democrats, period, that's a way of holding them accountable. Like you're saying,
right.
Well, don't vote them in next time. Okay, well,
right.
But if you let advance an idea where you're telling people not to vote for Democrats and watch their response. It's like, no, you can't do that. Every election is, this is the most important election. The Republicans are going to put you back in slavery, that sort of thing. Is you can't actually get to the part of holding them accountable, which is, well, I just want to vote for you. Even Yvette Carnell said, we'll vote down Democrats. Well, what does that exactly accomplish? nothing. I mean, they're still being power. Well, then how am I holding you accountable? If you made certain promises or we made certain demands and you, you know, gave indication you would entertain those things and you never did, voting you back in is not going to now this time they'll do it. Like, I remember when Obama ran the first time, I liked Obama, like, when he was running. I was like, oh, you know, like, he was, you know, he's a great speaker, very intelligent and all that. But, like, I just started, like, really listening to what he was saying one time. And I'm like, you know what? I told my mom, I'm like, have you ever actually listened to what he says? And she was like, oh, yeah, he's a great speaker. I'm like, he's an excellent speaker. But, like, have you actually listened to the content? I was like, because he's not saying anything, but it sounds really good. Like, it sounds good, but he's not actually saying anything. And so she listened. She disagreed, but then I was like, just the next time he's on, just listen. And she was like, you know what, you were right. Like, he isn't saying anything, but it does sound really good, and I like him. I was like, exactly. Mm-hmm. But so I didn't vote for Obama the first time. And this caused a lot of contention, you know, with my parents. And when he ran the second time, I was like, well, what he immediately was like, he's not the president of Black people. You know, he can't do anything specifically for Black people. But yet you won because of Black people. Like, you galvanized all the Black people to come out and vote for you and put you in office. And then you turn right around and say, well, I can't do anything specifically for you. Well, then it was all kind of excuses. Well, they won't let him. Well, he'll do it the second term. So me and my father talked about it. I was like, he's not going to do anything the second term because you don't even know if you're getting a second term. Why don't you just do everything the first term? But okay, I was like, you know what? I'll vote for him just to prove to you he's not going to do anything on the second term either. I voted for him the second time, and, you know, my opinion, he didn't do much more. It's probably even less. Actually, he did even less because that was after Trayvon Martin and Mike Brown and all that. And, you know, he came when Freddie Gray happened. He got on TV and called us all thugs. So, you know, if you try to hold them accountable, you can't do that either. I mean, if you try to hold them accountable.
Yeah, I like the example. Let me get to a break real quick, Queen, if you will. And I love the example. Love the example just for this. Like, what I feel like what you proposed was a actual response that makes sense. I'll just say what didn't resonate for me personally at that time, speaking of the march, was the or else wasn't defined. And so it was left out there to us.
Well, okay.
I love both.
I'm going to that, but if you need to take a break.
I'm going to go to the break. I was just highlighting that what you just explained was specific. Mm-hmm. I didn't like the broadness of the other one. That doesn't seem bold to me, in my opinion. But we'll go to break. We'll be right. We're going to continue the conversation after the break.
Hey, are you a wine drinker?
A little bit here and there, but my wife definitely loves hers. Why you ask?
Man, you got to try this vegan wine by Sip and Share Wines. I ran across them at this event in Atlanta, and now I keep me a few bottles at the house. What flavor you like?
I like me a good red or maybe a nice dipping deal or something. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, try this sweet red first.
That's nice and smooth right there. Yeah, that's
kind of
sweet, like I like it. You know what I'm talking about?
For sure. That's why I like that one as well. Hey, now try this Conjure Zinfandel. This one was featured in Forbes magazine as a top 10 drink for the summer. See what you think.
Oh, okay. Now that's fire right there. Where can I get a bottle of that?
Just go to sipandsharewines.com. They'll ship it right to your door. They black on, too.
Oh, yeah? Okay, you said what? Sipandsharewines.com? Is that it?
Yep.
Protests like this one over the Confederate flag erupted across the country in the wake of the shootings at a South Carolina church. It is just the...
Actually, I had another cut I was trying to play. I guess I did it, put it up wrong. But either way, we'll just get back into where we're at. Hillary, thank you for being with me. Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. This morning's discussion question is perpetual struggle a hustle? And so I think you had a response to what I was saying, that I felt like your example was a defined response. I love bold, and I agree with you. I agree with what, you know, with the example you gave, because I push for us to vote independent, and the only way you can hold a politician, whether they're Democrat or Republican, accountable is to be willing to vote them out of office. So I'm 100%, you know, with that, but I feel like it's specific. I think you had a response to me saying I didn't appreciate the quote-unquote boldness
coming from the, in my opinion, the rhetoric that, where I do agree with Yvette, is they're not going to bust a grape. So it's just rhetoric when it comes to that type of insinuation or else, in my opinion. Your thoughts, Queen?
Well, like you, I didn't go to the first one. I wanted to go because my dad was going, and I was a junior in high school at the time. But my dad was like, you know, it was really a space for men to, like, get together and, like, do stuff. So he would, you know, I didn't go. He wouldn't take me. So, but we did go to the second one, you know, and I felt it was important. I wanted, he was like, justice or else. I wanted to go there and see what the or else was. And even though, like, you know, the vibe and everything, that was all nice. But, like, what I personally was disappointed because he, yeah, like, nothing, there was no or else. And it was a lot of the coalition building kind of thing, you know, that was popular, like, you know, 10 or so years ago. It was that. It was, you know, oh, well, the Native Americans are there. Like, it's like, they're fine, to be honest. Like, they get benefits. We don't need to, they're not doing anything for us. Like, Black people spend a lot of time, like, oh, well, if we do something, we're always, like, the sacrificial, like, we're the mules. Like, we get stuff for other people, thinking that, like, it will be reciprocated, and it never has been. So I really was disappointed with that. I'm like, I don't want to see people up here with feathers. Like, none of that. Like, let's get to the or else part. And, like, I agree, there was no or else. Like, it was incendiary language, but not, like, any, like, definitive action, like, oh, well, we could do this. I mean, they did have, like, I guess they had calls, like, you could sign up and, like, get on these calls and stuff. I got on a couple of them, but, like, in my opinion, it wasn't, like, to actually, it wasn't effective, in my opinion. But and it so, could have been. It should have been. It had the potential, but enough of the potential stuff.
So, but just that, and that's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, like, that the part, what your disappointment for me, I, in my opinion, personally, again, it's not even about the march itself, but to a degree, I'm figuring out that out, that that's what the RLC is going to be fleeting, right? Like, I'm figuring out along the way that it's going to be fleeting because of the incendiary language. And the reason I'm saying that is because here's what I would challenge that we have specifically never understood. So while it is human nature and natural, like Malcolm X always said, self-defense is natural, right? You know, there was always the dialogue back then, between, you know, between when Malcolm and Martin landed in opposite of, you know, opposition of one another early in their, you know, in their lives. We know by the end they were saying a lot of the similar same things, if you will. But in speaking to that, I'm not surprised that the R else was fleeting, because is it a real solution or is it an incendiary to, I would offer the word you don't like, to hustle the community, come together, use the language, and somebody like yourself, they're playing on you who they know want to be bold, want to have that type of response if necessary. You're not afraid of that response or necessary. But when she challenged, well, be the first one to bust a grape, it's that's where it becomes a usury, if you will. Because there isn't going
to
be a
chance. That's what it is. It's not, like, you come up to the nation's capital, you talk about justice, or I was like, I don't even have an issue with him, like, living in a nice house or anything, because, you know, we're not supposed to be suffering. That is my firm belief. So I don't have a problem with that. But it's, you're not actually going to lead the charge. So if you're not willing to lead the charge, but you have put yourself out in front like that, then you need to, you know, say explicitly what the or else is. If the or else is, we're not going to vote Democrats, or we're not going to do this, or we're not voting for, you know, if it's a local situation, like, say what it is that you expect and what will happen if the expectation isn't met. And that wasn't done, and that's generally not done. I mean, Dr. O'Connor, really, most other people.
Right. It's generally not done. So getting away from the specific 20-year march, if you will, that's what I'm talking about, the concept of is perpetual struggle or hustle, that the language that is used and hung on to galvanizes, but the actual action, right? Like, you gave a specific, if we give a specific. So for me, it's not the no longer the challenge of you know, what's the specifics, I'm even challenged the awareness of, are these real solutions? So, for example, let's talk, like, for example, I always get into these debates about how effective violence would be, kind of, you know, to Yvette Cornell's point of us being 13% of the community, you know, of the country, if you will, but how effective would violence be? What I always say is overlooked is, if you remember in the cut where she goes, you know, I, you know, understand this country understands violence. I always said, well, when we're talking like that, the violence that we're saying we want to respond with, when people want to respond that way, just to kind of get on this point and why I say we lack understanding, it's so understood in this country that we are unaware that violence isn't going to move a group that, if you're too violent, will create a bomb that destroys a whole city. So the point I'm making is we're not even for those who want to be that bold, we're not strategic about how to be successful, even with being that bold, if you will. And the other thing that I would challenge that gets lost the most is we also mentioned how other groups or other races or ethnic groups come here and be successful. And I'm sitting here going, we don't even pay attention to their methodology that could actually have actual solutions that make sense for the current global economy and society that we're in. So, for example, there's this DJ here in Atlanta that I used to know, used to come to the barbershop. Him and these, like, I think maybe 20 to 30 brothers and sisters went and bought this whole big plot of land somewhere here in Georgia, and they're all living together. It's an action item that I know you, particularly Hillary, because I know you, would absolutely love and you admire. I'm only pointing it out for this reason, like, speak to a Black Wall Street and what happened, you know, having like 60 different Black enclaves around the country in the 1920s, maybe even more than that, if you will. Of, you know, when we're in a sense under segregation or whatever. And so sometimes when speaking to doing something like that similar, we know, we look at the history and we say, hey, look, they destroyed those enclaves at that time because, quote unquote, they don't want us to have nothing. I'm just talking about the language here. And so getting specific to the language, society has become so global that DJ I'm telling you about, they're going to be just fine. And nobody's going to be looking to destroy them because we're not under the same construct, for example, when the United States was an isolationist country, when it was in the middle of building its entire economy off the backs of free labor, or maintaining that now free labor, that free labor that's no longer quote-unquote enslaved, but maintaining in the way that was effective for the country. But now that we're, in a sense, we're competing worldwide, I've always said, now for those who say, you know, without an army, we can't protect it. And I'm like, we don't need an army. We can go just do what those, what the guy I'm telling you about did, and be just fine. I've spoken to the concept of insulation, you know, like being in Atlanta, I'm insulated from some of the issues that I see on social media and that I see on the TV and things that I don't have to worry about by being insulated by my own people. And I'm saying we're in a stage now where we can do like that DJ and his people did, and it's not going to be destroyed. Like, I'm going far saying that, but people who focus on it's going to be destroyed, focus on the history, focus on the struggle, they would never take that step because of what their focus is. We got about a minute before the top of the hour break. If you have a quick response, I'll get the rest of your response out of the break.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to remain dependent largely, you know, there's only so much fighting. And also, what Yvette Cornell was saying, like, about race wars and things like that, well, if you're going to fight like how they fight, then, yeah, you're probably going to lose. But maybe we need to stretch what our vision of so-called war would be. Like, it doesn't have to be armed, but also you notice when people do, you notice the people that become victimized, like by the police, or race soldiers. Like, they are soft targets, women, kids, old people, you know, infirm, mentally ill people. It's never, you know, someone who has the, at least looks like they have the ability and wherewithal and determination to fight back. It's, you know, they catch you from behind and choke you to death, you know, that sort of thing. So there, the America does understand and respect violence, or at least willingness to resort to that if necessary. If you're going to just be a doormat, that's why they keep treating us like doormats. But if you want to go and, like, do your own thing, like an example you gave, and you're willing to effectuate it, and you know what the goal is, and you know you're going to protect it, yes, that is a form of warfare, in my opinion. It's just not what we're used to or what they've done.
Makes sense. Let's hit this break, and we'll continue the conversation after the break. For anybody out there listening, 646-787-1691. Again, 646-787-1691. We'll be right back. Well, all I ask is that you think.
This is a TRJK.
Revolution won't be televised, but in the land of milk and honey, there's a date you gotta celebrate. Otherwise, it just expires and spoils. And these folks jump out to pop when the water too hot, cause the fire boils inside. You go to church to find you some religion, and all you hear is conniving and gossip and contradiction. And you try to vote and participate in the government, and the motherfucking Democrats is acting like Republicans. You join an organization that know black history, but ask them how they plan to make money, and it's a mystery. Looking for the remedy, but you can't see what's hurting you. Revolution's here, the revolution is personal. They call me the political rapper, even after I tell them I don't fuck with politics. I don't even follow it. I'm on some KRS, Ice Cube, Chris Wallace shit. Main source, De La Soul, bumping to Apocalypse. Now, yeah.
Hey, where did you get that hat and t-shirt? I like that.
Oh, I got this at moneymotivation.com. It's fresh, right?
Yes, and I love the message on it, too. You are the hustle, huh?
That's what the shirt says. I am the hustle. They embody the entrepreneurial spirit, and what I like the most, it's more than a brand. It's a lifestyle for those who want to put in the work and expect to have the finer things in life. I also follow them on Instagram. Check this post out.
If you believe money is the root of all evil, you're using it wrong?
Or how about this one? Excuses made $0 an hour.
I like those. What's their IG?
At moneymotivation.co.
But do they have any ladies gear?
Yes, you're going to love the clothing line they got for the ladies. Matter of fact, pull up their website, moneymotivation.com, and I'm going to get you a few things so we can both look like money.
Everywhere I go, go, and everywhere I be, I don't even talk, talk, they still know it's me, cause I look like money, smell like money, talk like money, even walk like money.
And Oklahoma is a unique space in terms of the number of African-American towns that were established. Some suggest upwards of 50 African-American towns between 1924 and 1928. Reverend F.S. Jones was going around documenting this sort of self-determined, vibrant African-American communities. You see the African-American educators, doctors, lawyers, landowners, oil barons, and I think that's what's so remarkable about this footage, to think that individuals, how many years out of slavery, are now owning oil wells that are producing 2,000 barrels a day. Is that not the ultimate American dream? Is that not the ultimate American story? It flies in the face of what I think some people consider part of African American history and culture. And I think that that was one of the things that Oklahoma and what F.S. Jones is really kind of showing, is that that African American history and culture is not a monolith. And in a way, it became kind of like a marketing tool to encourage individuals to migrate, to move there, that this is a place where you can live, you can thrive, and peacefully reside. There were still palpable racial tensions. There are lynchings, there's Jim Crow segregation, there's all of these things, and you still have an African-American community, or many communities, that really speak to the fortitude and resilience of black people in this country.
We Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Hillary Roberts. This morning's discussion question is perpetual struggle or hustle, as we hear a cut of this sister talking about the Black Wall Street in the Oklahoma area in the 1920s and what some of our people were able to accomplish. It was actually intentionally hidden history by Oklahoma itself for years, and so now we're well versed in it to the extent that we all know about it. Social media helps these type of things, but I knew most of my life I didn't know about it. I was fortunate enough to have on a previous rendition of the show before I was on Blog Talk a lot of years ago now, Mr. Jim Klingman. He interviewed the last 8 survivors of Black Wall Street. And so obviously learning that story has been in a sense, a celebration to even know the history. And then, of course, we know about, in a sense, the destruction of it. And a lot of people don't learn about, to a degree, how it was rebuilt to a certain extent. And again, it wasn't the only one. It wasn't the only black enclave. But here's what she talked about in particular. And I think it's the details of, if you will, Hillary, like learning history the correct way, you can use it, in my opinion, effectively for the future. But often we romanticize it or get stuck on the extremes of it and don't fully understand. And so when she talked about how that example of a Black Wall Street, Tulsa, Oklahoma, how it kind of shows that, you know, we're not a monolith. And so when you think about how that community came together, I always forget the names of the original guys who kind of got the plot of land and then started saying, hey, we're going to sell to others that look like us. I always forget their names. But those two brothers who were kind of forward thinking to think of it, here's what something that I think we don't think about in that process. They had to basically sell to others who had the means at the time to own land in order to sell it to just their own. Part of them doing just their own was strategic and smart, because in the sense, while yes, they could have sold the land to anyone, but for their own safety, it made sense. Let me surround myself with people who are not going to harm me. It's based on the racial tensions of the time. So it was strategic on that level. But I'm also highlighting that it was only particular African-Americans that they could even consider to be a part of it. And that's the part I think that we get lost on, is that things that happen and movements that happen that you are proud of, if you get behind the curtains and understand how they happen, it was never a concept of everybody black coming together. And so sometimes we romanticize that history and we'll say, well, during segregation, we had all of these things, and we're talking in such a general construct that we're losing sight of what it actually took to do it. And I would say learning those specifics is the type of actions that we could talk about specifically, and basically finding a tribe within a tribe, not simply because you look like me. Like, the oppression that happened to us didn't happen simply because all whites looked alike. I just talked about earlier in the first hour how they were fighting amongst themselves, even in taking over this country or whatever. That's what all groups do. And so I think quite often when we romanticize or misunderstand the construct of race, we start coming up with broad solutions versus understanding specifically how innovation and little cities like that popped up, if that makes sense. And so I think we could be smart to start understanding that versus this, we all should come together or we all are doing this. No, we're never all doing certain things. And if you want to advance, find your tribe within your tribe to do that. Your thoughts, Queen. Hello, did I lose you?
Sorry, I had you on mute because Cendrix came in the room.
Talking, no problem.
Yeah, I agree with that. we do need to learn from our history, understand it properly, and also we need to know how, like, we can't keep doing the same things. That might have worked then in that time. We might need to, you know, remix some things or abandon certain things altogether if they're not working now. I think we, as Black people, because we have a whole struggle history and things that happens, like, oh, well, they did that, it worked for them. Like, we don't adapt very well.
Right.
But I agree about, like, learning the history and how, you know, you point out in Tulsa, they couldn't sell it to everyone. It just had to be people who were in a position to take advantage of the opportunity. So it wasn't we all got together and this is what we're going to do. It's just like-minded people who are able to take advantage of what, you know, the opportunity, or creating the opportunity and having an agenda. Like, we just don't have an agenda at all.
Well, what happens is the agenda is effective. See, but the point is, your agenda becomes effective when you understand how things really happen versus this broad base. Like, how do you really have an agenda simply because of race, if you will? Because when you start talking group dynamics, how do you hold an entire group accountable? Even your own group, you can hold people accountable that have already accepted your values and think like you, or in the Tulsa situation, had the means to even own land. And then now you know that this person is just as incentivized as you to make sure it's natural to protect and defend as much as you can, if you will. But I've also, on the flip side of that, again, I just want to show how this, in my opinion, this hustler, race hustle mindset, I've even watched us demonize those very same ancestors while we hold them on a pedestal because found out, oh, wow, there was these Black enclaves. Well, I've also listened to us demonize our ancestors with what I call this hustle race language, from the standpoint of, we'll say stuff like, oh, we were fine under segregation. We were fine under segregation, not realizing that those Black enclaves were at the most 1-2% of the Black community. Again, that's just one part of the perspective. But the other part is, we'll now say stuff like, but we thought with integration, we thought the white man's ice was colder. When I started getting into the specifics of the history and understanding actually what happened and better understood, for example, I love making this point, and I made it at the Mental Dollar Live experience here in Atlanta, that when I better understood what the whole focus of integration really was, it wasn't to be next to the white man or go to school with the white man, even though that was one of the results that came out of it. The ultimate goal was equal protection of the law, so that a Tulsa, Oklahoma, could not have a Black Wall Street burning, could not happen. Those type of things, a lot of those enclaves, it was a lot of enclaves that were destroyed, And so when I say the race hustle language of, I've heard people that are considered leaders talk about where their biggest issue was, they didn't have an army. Like, that sounds cool and resonates in 2023, but it's so far from realistic when you understand how municipalities and countries are built and have law enforcement and have armies and how that's actually done. Now, there are also plenty of places in history, again, when you dig into history, where there were enclaves who were able to protect and have moments where they, you know, did, if you will, bear arms to protect the land that they were on. We do have those examples. But the idea of Tulsa, Oklahoma, having an army when the country was establishing itself as a state, as a town, with standing armies now becoming the thing, you know, historically, at one point the founding fathers didn't want a standing army or whatever, but the country developed. To your point, as you say, what worked then, what didn't work now. Like, to throw a blanket statement on our ancestors is disrespectful, in my opinion. I got some more thoughts on it, but I want to kind of just hear what's your thoughts as I kind of offer how we're disrespectful to our ancestors and what they actually were going through when we romanticize and blanket statement, you know, that history, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's just people parroting things. They're not thinking critically about this. The people in Tulsa did fight back to the point where they actually had to drop a bomb on them. Okay, so they did fight back. It wasn't they just sat there and let them come in and they burnt down the town. Absolutely. It wasn't that. And by saying, like, well, they did defend themselves. They didn't have, like, a army, as we understand, like, how the U.S. government has an army. But no one has that now. You're not going to be able to create that in your neighborhood now. Try to start assembling bomb-making materials. You'll get on a list, and you'll get a visit from some people, and you'll be in Guantanamo somewhere. I don't know. You'll be somewhere. So they did fight back. And a lot of people fought back. It's just, you know, they were, you know, beaten by people willing to go a little bit for push the envelope. I mean, that was the first time that the government dropped a bomb, you know, on domestic, you know, domestically. Any other time they've done it, it's also been in other Black communities that were of similar mindset. People do have a propensity to be very critical without actually thinking about what they're saying, about things people did in the past with the resources and things that they, that, you know, judging them by the time, like what they could do and what they actually did do. Like, you know, an example you gave about Oklahoma. I mean, they dropped a bomb on them. That's how bad they were fighting back. And then they didn't even pay the people. They still never paid them the insurance. They destroyed their homes and businesses. Right.
Yeah, the insurance money that was contracts that they had to rebuild without any of that insurance money. So, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We're up against another break, Queen, so we'll go to this break. But the biggest thing that I'm highlighting is if I wanted to get in front of a group and parrot it, they should have had an army. I will get applause and become a leader, if you will, by talking incinerary. That's what I'm talking about when I say struggle is a hustle. No critical thought to what actually happened. And like you said, what can we take and use from it? We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
What happens when your customers call your business and you're too busy to answer or call them back in a timely manner? You lose that business. Shockingly, 61% of inbound calls go unanswered. But fear not, tchmedia.ai is here to change the game. We specialize in capturing, nurturing, and converting your prospects into loyal customers. With our state-of-the-art communication solutions, no interaction will be left behind. When you miss a call, we've got you covered with automatic, engaging texts that keep your prospects connected and eager to choose you over your competitors. Don't let potential customers slip away. Make the smart choice with tchmedia.ai and skyrocket your conversions today.
AI is here to change the game. So let me tackle one other piece on the other side, which is part of your question, Montoya, in terms of limiting beliefs or how we think. I'm saying limiting beliefs. I absolutely do think this is one of the fundamental things that limits our belief about money, because we morally have this thing in our brains that says, yep, if you're making a lot of money, you had to do something shady. You had to do something wrong. And if you and because of that, I think that we end up creating a self-limiting ceiling that we don't even recognize exists. And the real ceiling is actually way far off. And the ones who are making a lot of money, they're not letting that self-limiting thing stop them. And I think this is a fundamental thing that really stops us from being able to do a lot more. And we don't even know how deep it's impacting us, but it is a self-limiting thing. And those making a lot of money, they are rejecting all limitations and going way past any self-limiting beliefs that start with what we're talking about right now, and it's deep entrenched in how we think. I absolutely do believe that piece.
And I agree with you, and I think, you know, and not to take this conversation in a different direction, but something else, you know, something part of it that entrenches it so deeply in our community is for those who hold beliefs of Christianity. I mean, in it, they tell you that it's okay to suffer on earth and you'll get your rewards or your riches in heaven. And I honestly, you know, or if you don't succeed, you know, hold on to your faith and you know, so I think those things actually contribute to our inability or our unwillingness to switch our mindset so that we can switch that wealth generator mindset on.
Let me throw this line in because it fits the line. What you just said, Latrice, about the Christianity and the limiting beliefs. I said, by the way,
struggling without money is also choosing money over life. The lack of money creates the same evils as the love of money. Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I am your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Hillary Roberts. I'm sorry, Hillary. I keep doing that. I apologize. It's
okay.
Perpetual struggle, hustle. You know, you were with me years ago. That's who you were. You know, and then you know, see your, let me make this real clear so I make the mistake a second time. And, you know, I'm so happy to, as much as you and I have pushed our community to have black marriage, I'm so proud to highlight the fact that you are married with your loved one. And for those that may have heard a baby in the back, we don't mind when our queens of intellect bring their babies to the show. You know, we are a family show. So let me highlight that. And, you know, I just applaud you for being an example of black marriage. Hopefully I can follow in your footsteps one day. But with that said, on this morning's discussion, you hear, I got a caller that wants to get in as well, but you hear a cut. That's actually from my latest book, Reeducation of the Negro. I did a Zoom and we shared commentaries. The book is designed to have small commentaries. I'm going to share one later in this show. But you're hearing a response to one of the commentaries, and that's Brother Mark Ranger, who's the CEO of Money Motivation, actually the commercial you heard at the top of the hour. And he was talking about, in a sense, the limiting beliefs within our community. Again, today's discussion question is perpetual struggle or hustle. And so I definitely want to move it to the mindset portion that I was talking about in the beginning, if you will, Hillary. You know, we've kind of talked about the nuts and bolts and how somebody can, again, use certain language. And is it really a hustle if you don't have a real solution? You know, that's something that we can all question. And again, when I say question, I'm not saying the person is not sincere, but we need to be smart and more strategic about what certain things lead us to. But the bigger issue, in my opinion, is how certain things affect how we think. And that's what you just heard Mark speak to. So any thoughts on that cut? And then we're going to go to a caller here.
I agree 100% with what they were both saying in the cut. Like I said, when Yvette Carnell was criticizing Farrakhan because he lives in a, you know, nice neighborhood and all this, and he's, you know, got money, like, I don't have a problem with that. We're not supposed to be struggling. You do need money. You need money to survive, like, in this world. And we need to definitely get away from, you know, the rhetoric is a hustle, because it's like we're still supposed to be struggling, though. Like, we can complain, we can get little things, but if you are successful, then people do look at you funny, or like they look sideways, like, what did you do? Or you're manipulating, or you're trying to scam people. And there may be some people like that. But as you said, if your rhetoric doesn't have like a clear solution that people can easily follow, it probably is a hustle, and we need to definitely get away from all that. But otherwise, yes, I agree 100% with what was said in the clip.
Yeah, and we have to be aware of it again overall for us. Like some part, like you use the word scam, part of why that's easy to do is because of how we're thinking within our own selves, right? Like even the idea of, you know, culturally to a degree, we almost don't respect you if you don't come from a struggle. I remember being raised with that,
yeah.
Whatever. I remember I had that same mindset. So let me own it. I've had to transition out of that mindset, but I know it kind of comes from the culture. Like there's less respect if you didn't come from struggle, instead of applauding that person's family for their family not having to be on that. We should emulate that. We want to come from the struggle and ensure that our family, if you will, isn't in the struggle. Our children are not in the struggle, but they may face ridicule if you've set your family up based on what our culture has unfortunately accepted. So I'm also talking about it from the other end of it, not just the leaders who may or may not be hustling, if you will. Let's get to this call. Area code 609, last 3891. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your 3 cents on this morning's discussion.
Good morning, Montel. This is Marilyn.
Montoya.
Montoya. I'm sorry. This is
no problem.
Marilyn. I just came in on the clip and when she was saying about the church, that is so true. I've been pastoring for now almost 30 years. The biggest fight we have with people is over money and the church. And they don't seem to understand that the church has its expenses just like everybody else does. And they come against the pastors who have versus the ones who have not, and against the congregations that are large and in charge with the money and the cars and the homes. But people work for that, and they channel their money in places that either make the money or are assets and not liabilities. And poor people, they have to stop believing that you have to work only to pay bills. Rich people don't work to pay bills. Poor people work to pay bills and to support everyone else. So that narrative is very dangerous, and that we can't seem to get from under because people misinterpret the Bible. The Bible talks about money from the beginning. In Genesis, he talks about gold in the five veins. You know, money is like the sister said, it's necessary. We can't live without it. People do everything they can to separate us from it. And I don't know why it is that we don't understand the importance of money and how to use it. So we don't have to struggle. We don't have to buy the Birkin bags. We don't have to buy the Coach bags and the jewelry and this and the bling bling and that to prove who we are. If you don't have anything because the world has everything that they can show, you feel that, and the world makes you feel like you're worthless, you have no value. So you spend your money with all these entrapments, and you have a nice car, and then you live in the projects, and the lights are turned off. You know,
Let me jump in, Marilyn, because I love a lot of what you're saying. I just want to always highlight this one thing. It's kind of when you're making reference with this salient point that you're making. But I want to highlight something that you said, because, again, I think this gets into the thinking when you says, I don't know why we think that way, and then you highlighted the aspect of the world making you feel worthless. That's your why right there. And I think we have to be, in my opinion, I always challenge this, we have to be smarter even in our language of, if you will, wanting to correct this way of thinking. We have to be smarter in our language, and we can't drop it off at I don't know why. We do know why, in the sense of, if there's a level of worthlessness that is perpetuated through a lot of narratives and language, specifically in our community, then once we own that, then the solution can be on making sure our children are properly valued. I'm not suggesting that what I'm saying is simple, because I don't want to be the broad solution. That's not something that's very specific. But I'm highlighting that we can't say we don't know why. And I know you would agree that you do know why. So that's why I said we have to even be careful in that, because in my opinion, when we start focusing on the why, then we can have, I would even challenge you, Marilyn, have a better dialogue than pointing out all of the results of what we're doing wrong. Like, we focus on the results of saying, hey, we buy bags, we buy Jordans. Like, that's a bunch of results, as if we don't know why they're in the line, as if Nike doesn't spend $1 billion on marketing by itself. And again, that's not, I'm just kind of pointing out that you can't just ridicule the results without talking about how do I negate my child seeing that advertisement. Like, there are steps that we can take to ensure the child's not seeing that advertisement. There are steps that families are taking for their children to have the value that they should have. But I do understand that if a child doesn't have that value, I'm not shocked at why that child is in that line, and nor will I waste time talking about that results. I will make an effort to explain to that child what their value is. Like, that's, for me, a much better dialogue than complaining about what we do. Hillary, give me a thought on that, then I'll let Marilyn respond.
Well, before we do that, I want to say that it wasn't that I don't know why. It's I don't know why we still perpetuate and believe that. We do know why. It's very obvious why. So the fact that we continue to perpetuate that marriage.
Challenge you on what you just said. Like, why don't you know why we protect you? Like it's coming from the same source. Like, we can't, like, if we drop off the why, we're going to just complain, in my opinion. I don't know that I'm gonna let you stay on with this, Marilyn. But Hillary, do you understand the dynamic and the nuance of what I'm trying to say here? Because a lot of times it still ends up not being a solution if all we talk about is our results. I don't know if that makes sense, Hillary. Just give me your thoughts on what I'm saying.
I don't know if I'm going in your direction, but there's a strong correlation between church and, quote, unquote, race hustling. Like, it's just a natural offshoot. I don't understand why, like, churches are, in this day and age, and this goes back to my point about adapting, church should not be running like how it ran, like, when our grandparents were going to church. People aren't believers like that. But the institution, I feel, could be stronger, but not in the ways where we sit there on Sundays and worried about all the ways the devil is going to get us. It could be an institution that improves. Like, they have the infrastructure, they have the leadership, and they have the ability to galvanize finances to make actual tangible changes. Like, for example, the church that I went to growing up, that is in a depressed area of town. But now, it's all these society people coming in, like.
I'm sorry, Hillary.
Hispanic people coming in, renovating houses that couldn't sell for $40,000 are now going, they got them up for high twos, low threes, all around the church. And I'm like, the church has been here all this time, and, you know, a big joke about churches is the building fund. Like, they have the ability, but, like, all these years, like, the neighborhood kept getting more and more depressed and in decline, and the church is sitting there and not actually doing anything just to revitalize the few blocks around it. And now other people are coming in and see the opportunity and cash in on it. So I feel like that's a way, like, we need to adapt. Like, we have something, they can do it, but they're just like, you know, people running around here with these race struggles, which is, we're going to sit here, we're going to sing some hymns, we're going to talk, you know, kind of how we are, you know, in a bad position. We're going to sing some songs to feel better. But nothing is actually getting accomplished. So that's why I feel like the race hustle is just a child of church. And a lot of them people, you know, they, or the older ones anyway, you know, grew up in that kind of setting and have.
Fair enough. Let me do this break, and I'll get Marilyn's thoughts coming out of the break. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think. If you want to get in, 646-787-1691. You do have to press 1 to let us know you want to speak. We'll be right back.
Hey, are you a wine drinker?
A little bit here and there, but my wife definitely loves hers. Why you ask?
Man, you got to try this vegan wine by Sip and Share Wine. I ran across them at this event in Atlanta, and now I keep me a few bottles at the house. What flavor you like?
I like me a good red or maybe a nice dipping deal or something. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Try this sweet red first.
Okay. That's nice and smooth right there. Yeah, that's kind of sweet like I like it. You know what I'm talking about?
For sure. That's why I like that one as well. Hey, now try this Conjure Zinfandel. This one was featured in Forbes magazine as a top 10 drink for the summer. See what you think.
Oh, okay. Now that's fire right there. Where can I get a bottle of that?
Just go to sipandsharewines.com. They'll ship it right to your door. They black on too.
Oh, yeah? Okay, you said what? Sipandsharewines.com? Is that it?
Yep.
Bad. That even starts with clarity, meaning I believe the most important thing that you need to have to be successful or to lead people or to drive any movement is clarity. If you don't have clarity, you can't be aggressive. If somebody can't be aggressive in terms of moving something forward, you may get there eventually, but you're not actually going to be moving it at the speed that it needs to be moved, let alone the intensity that it needs to be moved and then the preparation that it needs to be moved to actually make something happen. If people are unclear, they can't be aggressive, and we need aggressiveness. We need understanding. We need clarity on what we're actually trying to do, and I think that's what you're trying to point to. And then the other thing about capitalism that you mentioned was, to respond to that,
we're not going to change capitalism in America. That, I mean, that is a useless effort to try to say we're going to change capitalism. It's not going to happen. I think that is putting your ladder against the wrong wall if you think the movement is to try to change capitalism. W.E.B. Du Bois said that capitalism was like having 3 ears of corn. You eat one, you sell one, and you save one for next year's harvest. Now, if you think about capitalism in that way, and we learn to adopt that philosophy, you can't tell me that we can't build something special. So when in Rome, do as the Romans do. We're not going to change capitalism, but we need to understand it and then begin to use it to our advantage to the point we were talking about earlier, but then how can we use it to develop more in our community, have the right ideas, and then execute on it appropriately.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Hillary Roberts. This morning's discussion question is perpetual struggle or hustle. As you hear another cut from Money Motivation CEO Mark Ranger, and I just kind of highlighted that cut because of what we're talking about now when it comes to the finances and how our community, in a sense, sees the finances. And a part of a perpetual struggle quite often is groups even talking about tearing down the whole system, if you will. And I would just personally say I agree with Mark. Understand the system and take advantage of it. We've got a caller, Marilyn, on the line. Let me say, Marilyn, congratulations on your just graduated and got your a degree, if you will. So I just wanted to highlight that real quick. But, yeah, definitely wanted to continue to get your thoughts on this morning's discussion. Go ahead, Queen.
Thank you for that. Yes, I just did get my doctorate last Saturday.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, so he's right about capitalism. I mean, it isn't going anywhere. We have to learn to play the game. You can't win it unless you're in it. We're not taught that, and that's what I'm saying. Money is a tool, and it's used to purchase money. It's used to make money. I remember giving a 14-year-old $50, and before it left my hand to his hand, he wanted to go to the video store to buy a video game. And I'm like, that's not, and he said, well, it's money, it's to spend. And I had to reeducate him. No, money is not to spend. And I think our culture tends to think that, and we always end up with more money than we have money at the end of the month. You know, I get back to it. We have to be reeducated. We have to stop letting the major capitalist machines, the advertisers and the corporations, keep bamboozling us because we're so gullible, and they attack or they come to our emotions.
I disagree with that. Yeah, we're not so gullible when you understand that America, USA, I always use this term for my brother, Haziq Ali, who says USA stands for the United States of Advertising. And so when you understand that, and that every group buys into consumerism at the exact same level, I do not accept people saying something that factually is not true as if we're worse. I don't accept that because it's not true. It's not true that we're worse. I'm 100% with you on learning financial literacy, on helping that child understand why he shouldn't do it on a thing, but I don't accept the untruth. And I've always said this to you. I challenge you to go look at the information to find out we're not consuming any worse than anyone else. Now, collectively,
does not affect us. I'm not looking down my nose at anybody else. I'm looking up my nose at us.
Well,
I challenge
that dialogue, though. Because that dialogue now makes us have to be superhuman. And I'm highlighting
we are in a consumer, the entire globe is in a consumer mindset. You don't work hard just to sit there and look at the money. Like, no, you should be able to use it, and you should be able to use it without somebody trying to shame you about it. That's really,
right.
Well, then if you're being shamed,
but then
for using
we can't
it,
complain about the situation we're in.
That's not true, Marilyn. That's where you get this wrong. Like you can't say you can't. Yes, you can. There's plenty of people right now that don't accept situations that you're about to give as an example of, and they're doing what the hell they want with their money, and anybody can do that. Those two are not one and the same. It is a huge mistake to keep thinking that we can't complain. We can't complain if we spend our money like everyone else does. Like I'm the reason my passion on this is because this is also an acceptance of the perpetual struggle in a mindset
okay.
way. Like to get the action we want to get to, it can't be acting like we're acting different or that we can't act the same.
Well, the thing that's different is those other groups, Montoya, they are a collective group, and their money works and circulates within their culture, within their group. As a people, there is very little that we have that we support each other on a major degree. We have to go to everyone else.
That is so
untrue.
It's so untrue. Like right now in black businesses, if a business is a black business and it's openly black, because again, there are some people in industries where that is not necessary. But if there's an openly black business, ain't nobody going in that business but black people. Like we can't keep saying
exactly.
We can't keep
saying
exactly.
I understand that. Nobody's going to come and purchase from us.
But you can't also.
But when you look at the numbers,
when you look at the numbers, you will find out what you're saying is incorrect. It's absolutely
incorrect. Like the only black businesses are afloat is because of other black people. But when was the last time if you went to a Chinese takeout, you saw any Chinese people in there? You never do. You never see them at a Chinese restaurant or anything like that. They're not all like huddled together, kumbaya with each other. That's not even the case.
But they're not going to be in a black restaurant. You can bet that.
They won't be. But you're missing that they're not in their own restaurant. You suggested that everybody should. Like we're saying they're together. That's not true. There's like what we were talking about earlier is being strategic, understanding how Black Tulsa actually happened. When you understand how Tulsa, because I was using it because it's the example that everybody knows. When you understand how Black Wall Street happened, then you will realize that every group is doing exactly what Black Wall Street did. When I say every group, not in a monolithic way. It's not. No, there is no group that's all together. When you go see the progress, you can go to any point in history, and if you say this group progress, when you go dig into the strategy of how it happened, it wasn't all of them being together and the money circulating. That's an untrue, false comment that is made that is mythological. There is no money. Money cannot circulate. Money has to move through, and you have to get money from outside of your community in order to build your community. That's what every group does. But we talk in this perpetual struggle way and not realizing we're lost on an actual solution. We can't keep talking general things that are not true. We can't do it. That's what I'm saying.
Are you on the mindset that they're going to be in a certain place or have certain things, not, you know, well, we'll only buy from each other. We'll only do this. That's not what they're doing, and that's not what we need to do. And
exactly.
We need to, again, we are always saying, everyone else is making, it's like in slavery, they made money off our ancestors' backs. All these other people, they make all their money off of our backs still. We're supporting the entire thing. No one else is doing that. Everyone else is sitting at the table eating, and we're at the table. So that's the dynamic that we need to want to change. And like the Tichy play, which is like a word, I mean, he didn't use the word agenda, but that's what it is. He said you have to know what you're going to be doing. That's an agenda. We need to know what we're going to be doing so that we can go do it, not running around with catchphrases, you know, like money needs to circulate, like all this stuff. That doesn't tell you what to do. That's not a solution. That's just a catchphrase.
Exactly.
Because in order for us to be able to spend money with each other, that means some of us have to be in a position to open businesses and stuff or have services so that people can spend money with you. The issue is how do we get people to do that, to be able to do that? Not we just spend money with each other. That's nothing. That's just words.
Here's a perspective. Let me go to the last break, and then I'll come back with this perspective. Marilyn, I'll still keep you on for the conversation. Thank you for being with us, Queen. All right, we'll go to this last break and continue this conversation. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is this, that you think. LNG Technology Services, we are your industry leader in aircraft and heavy equipment repair services. In commercial business for over 15 years, LNG technicians have over 150 years of equipment-specific knowledge and are known industry-wide for returning worn-out, broken, and overused ground support equipment back to the user in working better than new conditions. For a service job done right at a value unparalleled in the industry, contact LNG Technology Services at 478-781-4860. Again, for a service job done right, that number is 478-781-4860. LNG Technologies is a Mental Dialogue Gold member and proud sponsor of the Mental Dialogue community. Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Hillary Roberts. This morning's discussion question is perpetual struggle or hustle. It's our last segment. If you want to jump in, 646-787-1691. Press 1 if you want to speak. We do have caller Marilyn on with us. And so, Hillary, love what you're saying, because the catchphrases is the issue with the perpetual struggle. And when I say it's a hustle, it's not getting strategic. For example, I have a piece in the Reeducation of the Negro where I talk about, for example, what happened to Haiti, if you will, after it had its revolution, that sometimes, you know, again, it's definitely something to be proud of. And if you're Haitian, absolutely you're going to be proud of the Haitian Revolution, in which you keep the French out. But in the piece, I highlight the Cold War tactics that the French used thereafter until to the point that Haiti has had to pay them back for rebellion up until recently. I think they finally stopped paying that bill, if you will, because of the Cold War tactics. Took Haiti, which was one of the richest countries in the Western Hemisphere during the transatlantic slave trade, to now it is might be the poorest country in the world, but definitely the poorest in the Western Hemisphere. And it was because of Cold War tactics. The reason I'm pointing that out is because we were, not necessarily Haitians, again, that's different, it's their real history. But those of us, Black people, who may look at that part as a proud moment, but if we never consider the tactics used thereafter, and to your point, Hillary, we don't figure out what to use now, what can be used now, or what shouldn't be used then, if you will. If we don't get strategic, then we start saying, look at what they did, not realizing how useless it is in today's time. And so I'm kind of pointing out, we're in a Cold War now, if you want to use that word. It requires completely different tactics than an actual war. And so a part of getting out of perpetual struggle is starting to get smart on what those tactics are. And so, Marilyn, that's, you know, so I'm just saying that's where I challenge you in some of the comments, is that some of it is catchphrases and we're asking for solutions that are not real. Other groups are not acting monolithically as we suggest. We say they are. It's not true. Let's find out what they're actually doing. And there's plenty of Blacks who right now are currently doing the things that work, and we don't highlight them. There are people with boots on the grounds with real solutions, and I watch them. I'll say Brother Tim Jackson out of Texas is one of the brothers I admire amazingly. Completely retired in his mid-30s, has real-life mentoring or whatever, has a great No More OGs podcast. I want to make sure y'all find that brother. He's boots on the ground, action-oriented, and he's constantly talking about how our leaders and even our belief systems push us towards non-solutions, and it's often hard for him to get highlighted, who has proof of concept, taking young men got them into real estate, taking young men, got them into STEM. And these are things I know you would agree with, Marilyn. So I know you agree with any action that matters, but I also will challenge any rhetoric that I know stagnates us psychologically. And it's because we can't act right if we stay stagnant in our thoughts. I'll let you respond, Queen. Go ahead, Marilyn.
I agree with that to an extent, but what we have to do is realize that it's happening on both ends of the candle. Both ends of the candle are being burned. We need to move it more to the progressive end, to a different narrative, to a different thought process in order to see the results. But there are people that are stuck on that end that are really hampering the progress as we as a people can make. We haven't reached our young people. They spend more money than the adults do because they end up with more money, and that money could come back into the community where there wouldn't be the crime that there is, where there wouldn't be the poverty that there is, and they're not spending that money with us.
That's so unfair. So unfair, Queen.
Yeah.
Thank you for your
thoughts. It's a true narrative.
It's
unfair or not.
So
we have to,
no.
We have to face the facts. Otherwise, things are
not
going to change.
It's not the facts at all. If we think young people not spending their money with us, which is not the which is nowhere close to the truth, is somehow going to be the solution for crime. Like, we start conflating things that are not nowhere close to reality. At the end of the day, crime goes down when you provide jobs. That has to come from those who are older than the youth, if you will. So putting that expectation on them is completely unfair, especially when the rest of the youth of all other ethnic groups and races are spending the money just like they're spending the money. And to think our black youth should have to do something specifically different in order for us to be okay is complete falsehood. Go ahead, Hillary.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it's not young people's fault. Also saying things like they need to spend the money in the community. What does that even mean? I mean,
Right. Well,
they probably get their hair done, and whoever does their hair, cuts their hair, is a black person that's coming in, you know, quote, unquote, into the community. Like, words like that have to have, like, action words on how this is going to get accomplished, because is there a black grocery store they could go to? Like, things that you have to do on a routine basis, like get gas, get groceries, buy clothes, like all these things. The utilities certainly aren't black owned. We don't even have any kind of significant, like, sector, like, where, like, you know, certain people, it's a lot of them in the police department, or they do the trash hauling. Like, we're not even in that. So, you know, some things, and also some things are supposed to be provided for or facilitated by your municipality, by the government, such as, you know, trash hauling. Well, why don't we get certain contracts? Why don't we push for have more contracts to do that? Either way, if someone has to make it so that if we want people to spend money in the community, that there is something there for them to spend it on. You're not even saying, like, what specifically. And also, there's a dearth of things where they just aren't going to be able to do that just on things they got to get on a regular basis. Car dealerships, I don't know, like anything. The infrastructure is not there. And if we want it to be, then we have to start thinking of how we're going to get there, how long it's going to take. It's not instantaneous. And what it takes.
Yep. Let me give you a quick example of what you're talking about, right? So what happens is when there's enough strategic thinking and we're not stuck in this, we have to do this and we have to do that, when you're not stuck in that thinking, because that's not how other groups are moving, if you will, then you can get smart how you navigate the world. So I had a dialogue on the show maybe a couple of weeks ago, and there's a Black Wall Street mall here outside of Atlanta that opened or whatever, and I found out from my guests that they're, in a sense, struggling, if you will. And, you know, from his perspective, you know, and really prior to that, he was like, how are we in Atlanta and there's no mall? Like, that was the initial thought, right? And then I highlighted where there is a Black Wall Street, but he actually knew the details of it. And so I'm like, okay, well, you know there's a mall, so I don't understand the initial thought. But then in speaking to how it wasn't marketed right and how it's not successful and how all the it's way outside of Atlanta to be keeping a buck with you, Hillary. But he was like, how, you know, how all the black people not out there supporting it and just talking about what the owner of it, you know, could have done differently and all these kind of things, which I respect because he knows the details. I don't. But to highlight today's conversation, why are we building a mall in 2023 when the industry itself is dying?
It's dead. Yeah.
So
actually,
go ahead.
Speak on that. Like my husband and I, we were driving around last week, and there was a grocery store, a black-owned grocery store in Baltimore. The idea of the grocery store, you know, it's something close to my heart. Like, we have fresh food, you know, healthy stuff, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
That was the goal because it was in a food desert where people didn't have access to, you know, decent food, only, you know, snacks and chicken and stuff like that. So that was their goal. But, like, it just, I mean, I used to try to shop there, but it was like the mindset of, you're supposed to be healthy. You're supposed to, you know, want this. Like, you don't have that. You need that. You should get that versus, like, I mean, they did eventually start putting, like, snacks and stuff in just to get people in. But, you know, it unfortunately failed. And when we were driving by last week, it's a dialysis center there now. So, like, I could have cried. It was like, even though they had a good intention, they had a need that should, you would think, needs to be filled, but it really didn't meet like where the community was, and it didn't have a plan to get the community like where they are in a mindset of, you know what, I should be getting fresh food, I should be wanting to be healthier. Well, now you don't have that, and now all y'all going to the dialysis center though.
Yep. And like to your point, so what is it, the Whole Foods, right? Whole Foods is extremely specific in comparison to the other grocery stores or where they're going to be located, right? So they are specific to being located in a place where they can do what you just talked about. Like, they're very specific of where they're located. It's market research. So I'm not saying, look, we don't do the market research. Like, I'm not demonizing us like that. I am talking about the smart dialogue of why, unfortunately, that example you just gave is probably, unfortunately, if it's in a community based on limited funds, right, you know, food deserts, that type of risk, the habits are partly due to the economics of it, right? And so, yes, while it is needed, how effective when at the end of the day, if the finances and the mindset are not going to make it viable in that situation. And again, I'm not trying to armchair the situation right now, but I'm talking about better dialogue than, oh, it didn't stay because we didn't support it. We'll generalize it and say that, and it's not factoring in what it actually takes to be in business, if that makes sense. And so, again,
because we're still looking for
struggle.
Yeah,
go ahead, Queen.
You have to meet that.
Yes, absolutely.
Because we are consumers, you have to meet our needs, our preferences. Black people will even go to Whole Foods. They'll go to Whole Foods from time to time. And you get a certain experience also when you're in Whole Foods that you don't get, you know, at other grocery stores. And, but again, like you said, they put themselves, they strategically place themselves. They're not trying to change the mindset of the, you know, they're not trying to go in an area where people are not health conscious or have the ability to, you know, spend their whole paycheck over there. They're not going there trying to convince them to buy their product. They're going like where they're wanted and needed and can profit from. And they give, you know, a good product. You're getting what you pay for.
Yeah. And what happens is when you get away from the struggle mindset, then you just make strategic decisions, right? Again, I applaud the Black Wall Street that's here outside of Atlanta for its efforts, right? I still applaud it. You know, but if we reduce it to why people from Atlanta ain't driving out there, like, that's no group does that. We think other groups go out of their way to support others. The reality is humans like convenience. And so when you understand you can get and offer a value, and you can travel and do as much as you need. There's no complaining. I think the sister, I don't know if Finney is actually black owned, but I guess she put a white CEO in. I just happened to see that line or whatever. And we're dogging that out versus she just may be running her business the smartest way and getting the best person. If we hadn't been through this struggle, that's what we will allow our people to do. But we get locked in on, oh, we're not circulating our dollar, which is a false concept, right? That's a struggle mindset that ends up hurting us, and we're not strategic. That was the challenge. Thank you so much for being on with me this morning. See y'all next Saturday. All I ask is that you think. If you're in the Atlanta area, I got a book signing for Reeducation of the Negro at Nubian Bookstore on June 30th. I'll be there from 12:30 to 4:30 p.m. Thank you, Hillary. Thank you, listeners. We'll see y'all next Saturday. All I ask is that you think.
Thanks, Montoya.